News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
8:07 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. We'll talk with Quinn Hillier here in just a minute about some local news, some national news, and get his take on all of it. But first, it's time to talk with our friend Vince Allegri from Allegri Farm Market in Daphne and what's on the farm this week. Good morning, Vince. How you doing?
Just fine. How y'all doing?
Hey, we're doing great. Weather is very nice. Got a little bit of rain over the weekend, which I know you were looking for. What are you currently harvesting out there at the Allegri Farm Market in Daphne?
Right now, we've got the fall vegetables, and they are pretty. We got large bunches of turnip greens, large bunches of collards. We gather those every day fresh for the market. Also, we're really picking some beautiful yellow squash, zucchini, okra, cucumbers, and pickling cucumbers.
Mm. Man, you got it all going on out there at Allegri Farm Market. And while the produce is, of course, top of the line, best you can get, you also have all kinds of other goodies folks can pick up at Allegri Farm Market, like, you know, Kaneka sausage products. And you're making a little trip today? Is that what's going on?
That's correct. When we get off the air, I'm going to Kaneka Sausage in Andalusia at their new facility and pick up the order. We carry all their varieties, including the all-natural, no MSGs, Kaneka Bacon, and don't forget our frozen breakfast biscuits and link sausage and patties.
Man, so good. So good. And I know you're going to have a great trip today going up there. Also, I know this weekend we put a lot of work out at my house on making the home look fall ready. And you've got some great stuff to help people out with that, too, including these mums that you have on hand.
Yeah, we got our last load of mums in. They're really pretty. And this is the last load. We also still have a plenty supply of pumpkins, all types, Cinderellas, Fairy Tales, Gerrindales, Casper's, Moon Glow, Milk Chocolate, and the other favorite, the Tontos.
Mm.
We have corn stalks and hay, too.
Man, yeah, you've got it all if somebody's trying to make their home look Halloween and fall ready. And your location, also very convenient for folks to get to. How can people find you, and also what hours are you open?
Yeah, 181 and 64 in Daphne. We're 4 miles south of I-10 at exit 38. We're open 7 days a week. 8 to 6, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 on Sunday.
All right. Thank you, Vince. We appreciate your time every week.
Thank you, sir.
Vince Allegri with Allegri Farm Market in Daphne, and that's what's on the farm this week.
Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, and the newspapers over in New Orleans as well, is joining us right now. And Quinn, good morning. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday, guys.
So as we wait for Mayor-elect Spiro Chiragatis to take office next month, and we've talked quite a bit about maybe his plans or potential plans heading into his first term, Quinn, you're paying attention to, well, several other municipal elections, but especially one in New Orleans. I guess they recently had this election, new Mayor-elect Helena Moreno. Tell us about this and kind of how you're comparing this to Mayor-elect Spiro Chiragatis as he prepares to take office.
Well, there is a difference in that Spiro Chiragatis is taking over after a what's generally seen as a very successful mayor who did a lot of good things and who endorsed him. So, you know, so the urgency maybe isn't the same, but whereas Helena Moreno in New Orleans is taking over from a very unpopular mayor who's under indictment, whose second term at least has been seen as an utter failure. So that might explain a little bit about what I'm saying, but not all of it. Helena Moreno just got elected last Saturday. Okay. And she doesn't take office until next year. Whereas Spiro Chiragatis got elected a full month ago, he takes office in a couple of weeks. You would think that Helena Moreno would be the one taking her time to build a transition since she has the time, whereas Chiragatis would be absolutely roaring at the bit. It's been just the opposite. I haven't seen. Did I miss something? Did he announce a transition team? Did he announce anything about, you know, who's going to be his chief of staff, who's going to be on his staff, any major plans, anything like that? If so, I haven't seen it. I'm not this is sort of constructive criticism because I think he's going to do a good job. But this is what Helena Moreno did in the first several days. Okay,
mm-hmm.
She announced a four-person team to head her transition. People in the, you know, very well known with great experience in the community, in business, and in city government. She announced two very high-profile people to lead a national search for a chief of staff, or it's called a chief administrative officer. She immediately put up a website that is going to A, list city jobs available, B, encourage people from outside the normal, you know, civil service, you know, and political hangers-on ranks to apply for the job so they can find the best candidates, and also to be very transparent and regularly update people on her transition. Those are three major aggressive steps she took in the very first days after being elected, even though she has all the way until next year before she actually takes office.
When does she take office?
Is it
January?
Oh, my goodness. I think it's either January 12th or February 12th,
okay.
but it's soon. But the point is, I haven't seen, unless I missed some big announcements, I haven't seen much at all from Shara Gattis about transition plans, much less governing plans once he gets in office. And there is, I think, a lot that actually needs to be done.
So he was on Sean's show for some time, maybe a week ago?
Yeah, he was on for about 30 minutes.
Okay, 30 minutes. All right. So in that time, I don't know what kind of plans he talked about or what the conversation was like.
But you're right. I mean, it's right around the corner that he'll take office, and I haven't seen much news about any kind of transition team or what his team will look like in November. I know a lot of folks in this election said, you know, and there were a lot of... Well, you know, they'd call him the Nepo mayor and stuff like that. That was kind of the dig that people would try to get in on Spiro because he had the endorsement of Mayor Stimson. And a lot of folks were wondering if he wouldn't just, you know, copy and paste much of that Stimson administration into his office. Even if that's the case, you want to see it now, right, Quinn? You kind of want to see those plans before he takes office.
Well, yeah, I mean, just to show a little energy and show the public that he's really going to hit the ground with a lot of energy and the right sort of aggression. Look, I have written in national publications several times that Sandy Stimson is one of the best mayors I've ever seen in my life, probably the best mayor of a town this size I've ever seen. But that doesn't mean there aren't things that still need doing, especially since Mayor Stimson in the last term especially has really been concentrating, it appears, on these big projects, the airport, which is a fantastic thing, the new civic center, you know, a little bit on the bridge, although that's still going slowly, things like that. But there are some infill, some littler things that really need attention. Why is, I said this last week, Government Street beyond, beyond, say, Catherine. Government Street beyond Catherine all the way until you get to nearly the interstate where you have, you know, that shopping complex, et cetera.
Yeah.
Why is it so dead? Why is it run down, abandoned buildings, looks trashy? We should be, in a thriving city, that Grand Boulevard should have infill, should have stuff going on there, and it doesn't. Mm-hmm. What can be done about that? I could go on. I'm sort of filibustering.
And Quinn, you know, I haven't seen much on, you know, what Spiro's team will look like once he's in. I do know, pulled this quote from after the runoff, and it was actually Mayor Stimson who said this, who of course endorsed Chair Gattis, and he told NBC 15, if you look at, say, starting next Monday, which would have been at this point a good 3 weeks ago, I said, starting Monday, I would expect Spiro and I would be connected at the hip. I visualize we have a plan, a transition plan that you may see in the military, who he's going to meet and how he's going to do all that. But I want him to sit in meetings right beside me and look at the people helping to make the decisions, multiple meetings day in and day out, so that he gets a flavor of a way to do it. It may not be the way he'd do it, but that way he would get exposed to it. And then he was asked, how much will the new Chiragatis administration look like the Stimps administration? And Spiro said, you know, I think that remains to be seen. There's no doubt we'll make changes, but I don't think Mobile is broken. And if it's not broken, don't try to fix it. But there are some things we need to improve on. So that's that was the statement after the runoff. And that's kind of what it sounds like to me. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And more than that, don't ruffle any feathers on your way in. Kind of sounds like the way they're going in.
Yeah, and I get that, and that's why I had sort of a lengthy intro saying that the circumstances are slightly or the circumstances are different. But still, he takes office in what, 2 weeks, something like that, 2.5 weeks, and he never did announce an actual transition team. He didn't announce, what is Barbara going to still be his chief of staff? We don't know. I'm glad he's at the hip with
the mayor.
Mayor Stimson learning the ropes, but he also does need to put his own stamp on it, and the public deserves to know what of his stamp will be different. And again, I think he's going to be a good mayor. This is meant as not a trash, but just a sort of a nudge, constructive criticism.
Yeah. And a quick, give us a little analysis on this New Orleans mayor. I mean, it's the end of our Amtrak line. We need to know about this lady who's running the city now.
She's from Mexico. She was born in Mexico.
Born in Mexico. It looks like she spent a bit of time in Texas, too. What are the expectations from folks of New Orleans with this new mayor moving in?
Well, it's very interesting. On national politics, she is as progressive and woke as you get, which, in my mind doesn't bode well. But she was in the state legislature for a term or two. She's been on the city council for 8 years. She has fairly independent wealth and does not seem to be in any way corrupt, financially, not on the take, doesn't need any of that. Has been energetic, has been thoughtful on the city council, has actually, called for audits and stuff that fiscal conservatives would do. And she had a lot of support from some big name Republicans, et cetera, et cetera. So she has governed on the city council as more of a moderate liberal, whereas in the state legislature, she was more of a big liberal.
She raised a lot of money, right? She raised a good bit of money.
She raised a lot of money. And again, at the city level, ideology doesn't matter as much. And she encouraged people by calling for an audit, by regularly, asking about the books, trying to show some management savvy. And we hope she takes that attitude into the city once she becomes mayor.
Hey, by the way, your thoughts on government that you've government street that you've talked about the last 2 weeks here. What's the solution to something like that? I mean, that's just commerce. Business, yes. Business, no. People are deciding to put a business there. You got a, you've got a Walmart there. You have a Colonel Dixie closed down. I mean, these are private business ventures. What can be done? I mean, in New Orleans, you've got Claiborne, which is a long, similar to government. It goes through the most of that city, and there's areas of Claiborne that don't look like
that are
high
not
cotton.
Very good at all.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there are things you can do to specific parts of town when you focus on them. Look at what all the good things that Mayor Stimson has going on St. Louis Street. People forget 12 years ago, St. Louis Street was just, it was dead. It was nothing. It was ugly. And now their businesses, their restaurants, their stuff, and even more is going on because you get grants, you have focused plans, et cetera, et cetera. And St. Louis Street is doing well. Now they're focusing on the riverfront. It takes focus. It's a mixture. I'm a big pusher of cutting the sales tax, replacing it partly with some other revenues, because that will encourage retail. But you can also look for grants. You can try to encourage what happened in Spring Hill with Spring Hill Village, which, by the way, my mother-in-law helped get going decades ago, right after Katrina. Mm-hmm. You can see if there's a community group in there that will take the lead the way Spring Hill Village did in Spring Hill. There are all sorts of things you can do if you show some focus and some energy. Speaking of blight, the mayor finally came up with a good plan for attacking blight downtown, but the city council again has refused to pass it last week. They need to get off the stick and pass that. Anyway, the point is there's lots that needs to be focused on sort of what I call infill. They've got the big projects, but now you got to fill in the gaps where people live.
And you just happen to notice that gap on government. I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, government is a... Look, for a lot of people, you know, if they want to do the old Highway 90 thing, that is their that's their first impression of the town.
Sure.
Is they come in on 90, which is government, and they pass the interstate, and for 2 miles it looks like absolute trash until they get to the beautiful oak-lined areas closer to downtown. But those first 2 miles leave a really bad impression. That's why Government Street is important.
All right. Good
3
stuff.
3 miles, maybe. 4 miles.
Good stuff from you, Quinn. If folks want to read where you're writing, I know QuinnHillier.com, a good clearinghouse. You write for NOLA and The Advocate. You're all over. Is that where you want people to come and seek you out?
Yeah, Google Quinn Hillier and NOLA.com, and that'll work, or QuinnHillier.com, although right now the site is a little bit wonky.
Okay.
It looks like Government Street, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Hey, thanks, Quinn. We'll talk again in a week.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Uh-huh. Thanks.
823 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Turning up your voice, 251-343-0106. Also, I believe we're going to have a quick conversation with State Representative Speaker Pro Temp Chris Pringle coming up here in just a little bit right here on Mobile Mornings.
Now that we know that Quinn wants to take an entire boulevard and just shove it into the Gulf.
The Gulf of America.
Mobile River. Just shove it off. Okay.
I get the complaints about different parts of the city maybe looking worse than they need to, and the blight conversation downtown, I get it. Maybe I'm not as hung up as some others on it, but, you know, there's parts of cities, any city, that is older, maybe less affluent, and that's just kind of how it looks, you know? I don't to call 3 miles of government trash, I guess, but not really. I mean, you have a pretty large area for the city, and fewer people in that making up that area. I don't know. It just seems like a strange thing to kind of get hung up on.
Yeah, but he feels it. And I think one of the things about it that bothers him most is that so many visitors, that's their first view of Mobile. It's called Government, which, you know, gives you the impression, okay, government work is done on this boulevard.
No, it's kind of fitting, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's I get it. But it has a maybe a larger... gravitas because of the name and the fact that it is one of the major boulevards that runs east and west to downtown, and also it's Highway 90. So it might be part of it. But in any event, I'll have to notice more often how sickening the sight of Little Flower Church is, because I haven't noticed that it's all that bad.
Yeah, that's a pretty strong language there. 251-343-0106. We have several texts we'll get to here on the other side. Plus, I believe we're talking with State Representative, House Speaker Pro Tem Chris Pringle here. We had a story. It was about the Alabama... Well, we were talking about the Alabama prison some this morning, but also this pay raise for state legislators next year. The travel reimbursements caught my eye. We'll see if we can get an answer on some of that and a whole lot more on the way. 251-343-0106 if you want to hop on with Mobile Mornings. FM Talk 106.5. We'll talk with State House Speaker Pro Tem Chris Pringle here in just a second. First, it's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, we're doing just fine. Sun's out. Temperature lower than it was a month ago. Can't complain. And why don't you tell us what you have going on over at McConnell Automotive? We talk so often about the trucks you have, bringing in new and pre-owned vehicles from all over the southeast and the country, and you have quite the selection on the lot right now.
That's right. I've got two guys going to Bristol, Tennessee this morning to pick up an Acadia. So, I mean, we'll go just about everywhere. But, yeah, we're buying cars just, like I said, everywhere. You can check everything out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. And those new GMs are getting here every day now. I mean, we got some invoices on some Yukons, Terrains, and the new body style Acadias, which looking good. And got any questions, give us a call, 251-476-4141. Don't forget, if you have that unfortunate accident, McConnell Collision back there in the body shop back there, Rachel and all the guys and girls back there will take care of all your insurance needs and help you out with a loaner car if you need one of those. So if you have that unfortunate accident, give them a call back there. Same number, 251-476-4141.
Yeah, I think most of us have been in that situation, but not as many have had the pleasure of having McConnell Automotive help take care of that problem. And it is certainly worth it to give that body shop a call. We appreciate your time this morning, Louie, and have a good one.
Hey, thank y'all.
Louie Raddick, go see him. He'll be at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and the website as well, McConnellAutomotive.com. 8:36 now, and we were talking earlier a couple different things regarding the state legislature, one being the big prison projects that are ongoing. Yep. And some news made there, but also the pay increase, which is coming next year. And I had a question about travel reimbursements, and Chris Pringle, state representative, House Speaker Pro Tem, joins us because he heard our call and called in. Good morning, Representative. How are you?
Good morning. As always, I have to say hello to my wife and my mother. So hi.
That's awesome.
Well, we know they're listening. That's good.
Love that they're listening. So, and you're always so forthcoming about a lot of the stuff that we complain about regarding the state legislature, and you answer some questions, maybe soothe some nerves sometimes. But we're talking about this pay raise that's coming next year, a good 7% increase. Of course, that's tied to the census data, median household income. But something that caught my eye, Representative, was the climb in travel reimbursements over about the last decade. Climbed from about $40,000 in 2014 to, according to Alabama Daily News' numbers, about $1 million from the latest reports. And you said, hey, I have an answer for that. So what is going on there?
The legislative pay constitutional amendment was passed when I was in the legislature that passed. What happened, the 1901 Constitution set our legislative salary at $10 a day for the 105 calendar days the legislative session runs. So we made $1,050 a year.
That wouldn't really hold up.
Yeah, and we were paid 10 cents a mile based on the 1819 rail miles for one round trip from the seat of our district to Montgomery. So wow. I got 38. It was $38 a year for a legislator from Mobile.
Wow.
For gas money. For the entire year. The way this constitutional amendment changed, our salary was set at the average median income in the state of Alabama as determined by, I think it's the Department of Labor. We have no control over that. It goes up, and I've seen it actually go down since it's passed. But we're treated the same as a state employee for travel.
Okay.
So when we leave our houses to drive to Montgomery, we're given the same travel per diem and mileage as state employees. Before that, we were given about, I think it was like $1,500 a month as expense money that we pay state and federal income taxes on to cover our mileage and our hotel rooms. Now we're treated like the same as a state employee. Okay. That's the reason why. Large increase.
That makes a lot more sense. So back in 2014, when that number was 40,000, basically the state legislature was still working off of the same rules as they were back in the early 1900s?
Yeah, and that 40,000 was probably covering out-of-state travel when we go to like Southern Legislative Conference. I'm proposing here, yeah, but it was a totally different travel formula.
So what happened in 2014 actually made things a lot more fair for you all, correct?
Yeah, the legislature, we're treated the same as a state employee, but remember this: what we're given for a hotel room per night will not cover the cost of the hotel room, which I'm not complaining about, but it's a problem with our state employees when we ask them to travel to go to a conference to improve themselves.
I know some of them. They've got a bit. It doesn't work out well. Yep. I mean, they've got to come out of pocket.
Yeah, we want one of our accountants to go to a training seminar. They've got to come out of pocket to learn to do their job better for the state.
Yeah.
So I'm not complaining about the situation.
Yeah,
I worry about it.
you know you're going to catch, I'm sure you know, going to catch crap anytime the legislature gets a pay increase. But like you said, you know, it's tied to the median income, and it has dropped previously. Back in 2015, the pay was cut to just under $43,000 a year. Since then, it's climbed along with the median income. While we have you on the line, too, Speaker, prison story, and we talked about an update to that now with Escambia County's prison, the state looking for a project manager for that. And this has been going on for, well, we've been talking about it for dang near or more than a decade, and the legislature passed this about 5 years ago. Where kind of, I mean, are we getting antsy? What are we doing about all the funding here? What's the issue with the prison projects?
Well, the one in Elmore County just blew up and has cost so much more than anybody expected. But we desperately need prison space because of the ongoing litigation against the state of Alabama. I fortunately am not involved. That's Greg Albritton, Senator Albritton. I can talk to you about the new state house that I'm involved in is on budget at the time.
And we've heard you talking with Jeff Poore and with Sean Sullivan about that too. When's the estimated opening for the state house? Is it going to be a couple years?
No. The new parking deck, it will be open when we go back in session in January.
Wow.
I was there last week, and it's coming out of the ground, which will help relieve a lot of the parking problems. When we adjourn sine die from this session in May, they will begin disassembling the voting machines and moving them across the street. When we reconvene into session in January 2027 for organizational, we will be meeting in the new chamber.
Okay. Wow. Right around the corner.
Also, West Alabama Highway Project now. In your view, how murky is all of that?
Yeah, I've said this numerous times. We need the highway. There's no doubt about it. The problem I have is, you know, the highway director, Cooper, decided on his own he was going to build that highway and not get federal permits.
Mm-hmm.
And because he didn't get any federal permits, we don't get the usual 80-20 split where the federal government pays 80% of the cost of building a U.S. highway and the state pays 20%. The state is having to pay 100% of the cost of that highway. But the worst part to me is because he did it on his own.
Mm-hmm.
The Black Belt Rural Electric up there, Blackwater Rural Electric, had to put a $7 a month fee on every single person's meter in that area to cover the cost of relocating the utility lines because they can't get the match. So
wow.
These poor people in rural counties are paying in perpetuity. Forever, they're going to pay this fee to cover the cost of what John Cooper wanted on his own.
Yeah, and that also, like you say, that is not in any way a wealthy group of people.
No, it's not. And the gas tax that we passed to build the infrastructure we need is being eaten up by this one project that he decided he wanted to build his way.
So,
and that's the biggest problem.
And you've mentioned it on the Jeff Poore Show, but the future of that project seems to me to be in serious doubt as we move forward, and especially with a new governor soon.
Well, you know, you get a new governor and a highway director, they're going to look at the project and see the total cost of the state, and they're going to probably say, look, we're going to have to tap the brakes on this, and we're going to go back, and we're going to get the permits we need so we can get the 80-20 split. Because not only are the taxpayers having to pay the full cost of the construction, because of the way he's done it, we can never get federal matching funds to maintain or repair that road. Well, the taxpayers in Alabama will have to pay the full cost. For
And one final thought on it, Representative, is that it's not only that project, but it's a lot of people, I think, from Ainsworth down to regular citizens are saying, no, we've got something right in front of our nose needs to be worked on. That'd be I-65.
Well, I was there when we created the Port Authority, and we took the docks director out of the governor's cabinet and made it a professional position that answered to a professional board.
Mm-hmm.
We now have the fastest-growing port on the Gulf Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Look at all the incredible things that are happening with our port. We've got the facility in Montgomery and Huntsville. Our port is growing and expanding because of that professional leadership that has a 5, 10, 15, 20-year plan. I met with John Cooper before the 2018 election, said, let's have a meeting and explain to the new members how the A-Trip works and the five-year plan from the highway department. He turned and looked at me and said, I'm not going to waste my time meeting with a bunch of legislators.
Hmm.
I said, why? He goes, because until the governor's actually elected, sworn in, and then tells me what road or bridge she wants built, there is no plan at ALDOT.
Wow.
That's the reason why Alabama does not finish transportation corridors. The only reason I-65 was finished is the feds made us do it. But if we had a long-term strategy, they should be building 3 miles north of Montgomery, 3 miles south of Birmingham until they connect. They should go north of Birmingham and start widening the interstate 3 miles. Because I-65 is the only north-south corridor we have in the entire state of Alabama.
Yep. It's it.
Pretty wild. He doesn't sound very agreeable, this Cooper, from the stories I've heard. I'll just say that. Speaker.
He couldn't get along with his neighbor, for God's sake.
Speaker, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for calling in. When you heard, we had that question about the travel reimbursements, and we always appreciate how accessible you are and willing to let folks know what's going on around here. So we appreciate you calling in.
Great. Thank you so much, guys. Have a good day.
You got it. There is House District 101 Representative Chris Pringle, also the House Speaker Pro Tem, on with the, we asked, and when the first time you did the story, we just went ahead and said, hey, if you're an elected official, let us know what's going on.
Yeah, I didn't realize they were still working back then off the old 10 cents a mile rule.
Yeah, that's like, back when they were working off of a chart when people were on mules.
It would take
a day and a half to get somewhere.
And any time there's a pay increase for legislators, and that was kind of an extended part of the story, the travel reimbursement, but you know that people are going to be upset. And like I see King of all unnamed texters here. Pretty wild. Government can make sure their wages keep up with median income. Everyone else can kick rocks, I guess. But it's the reason why, they voted this in a long time ago. And it does make sense to kind of base it off of that. So you'll have a pretty standard scale to go to work off of, rather than just picking and choosing who gets paid what. But that's going to bring some grief once folks see that they're getting any kind of pay raise.
Yeah.
251.
No, I agree.
Okay.
Completely.
251-343-0106. Also wanted to bring this up and maybe have more time to discuss this tomorrow when we have a pretty wide open 8 o'clock hour. But John Sharp writing about now former mayoral candidate Paul Prine, former Mobile police chief Paul Prine, and kind of what he may have in the what he may do next, as he possibly continues looking for a career in politics. John asks, will prime time return in 2026? And he says, Prine said a big decision looms in the next 4 to 8 weeks. And he saw the success he had. Going by value on the dollar for donations for mayoral candidates, he did a pretty dang good job.
Yeah.
Better than the other candidates as far as how far he stretched each of those donations, as he had pretty good turnout and I think by far raised the lowest amount of money of the final four contenders there. But he's maybe looking, according to this story, at, running against incumbent Sheriff Paul Birch, potentially. That's what Sharp says is the most obvious path for Prine. But Prine also says other opportunities are on the table in this story, including a bid for Alabama's first congressional district. So could we see Prine versus Marcus versus Jerry Carl running for that district, or a run for the Alabama State Senate in District 34? And that's, of course, held by Senator Williams right now. Jack Williams, I believe he's running for Ag Commissioner, so that'll be an open seat.
He is running for Ag Commissioner, so you're right. That's going to be wide open.
So, I mean, what do you want to see Prine do? If you were a Prine supporter, or maybe you like Prine, but you didn't support him in the mayoral contest, do you want to see him continue in this path of running for office? And if so, you want to see him in a role like sheriff? I mean, that would be a pretty, I don't know if divisive is the right word, but going round and round with this sheriff's contest, if it ends up being Birch versus Prine, that could be something else. And then, of course, you have the first congressional district. That would be fascinating as well if Prine decided to run for that. You wonder, he would need to pull in a lot more money compared to
what he did for mayor,
even relative to the money needed to win a mayoral race. Compared to what you need to run for Congress, he'd need a lot more money to run for that. State Senate, I don't know. Maybe that would be something.
After the dust settled with the mayor's race, remember there was some kind of like post-election talk about which each candidate. Now, is Prine just going to fade into the sunset? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were saying, no, he's not. That's not going to be his path. It will be political, and here we go now that the talk is there.
If you're on his team or if you're him, you look at the momentum they gained during that mayoral race. You don't want to put that to waste. Maybe see if you can extend it into another office.
That's a really good point. 851 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Dan and Dalton. Morning from Dan and Dalton. Text line 251-343-0106. Is the shutdown hurting Donald Trump in the polls? You might be surprised. We'll look at that here in just a moment.
Yeah, run through some texts here. 251-343-0106. We were talking about road projects with House Pro Temp Chris Pringle there. BA says, let's not forget the bridge to nowhere in Orange Beach and the proposed north-south traffic flow changes that ALDOT wants to make once that bridge is finished. Summerdale Tony on the future of Paul Prine in politics says, I don't think he could beat Sheriff Birch. I think his best path, if he wants to stay political, would be that state Senate race for that District 34. Leo says, I would vote for Paul Prine over Jerry Carl any day of the week, and I don't even know who the other guy is, he says, talking about Rhett Marcus, I guess. Monty says, I like Prine, but he would be advised to not run against Birch for sheriff. He would get crushed. And Jason adding to that, too, I'll support Chief Prine, whatever he does, but I think we're in good hands with Sheriff Birch, as long as he wants to be there. So clearly, Birch has a lot of support from our listening audience. That's evident.
And, he, of course, he's semi-regular on the station as well.
There's that, too. Coming up on the Jeff Poor Show, Paul DeMarco, Bradley J with Breitbart News, and Scott Buttram from the Trustful Tribune today.
So the guy that acts like Mad Dog on the ESPN does the polling for CNN, and he's a very animated guy with the New York accent. And anyway, he seems to get excited when Trump is doing well in the polls, which aggravates whoever he's talking to.
He's trolling the CNN audience.
Yes. He is. This is him talking about Trump, the shutdown in a recent poll.
You know, we speak about Donald Trump shutdowns, net approval rating. We're talking 20 days into it. In 2018/2019, Donald Trump's net approval rating was already falling. The shutdown was eating into his popular support. It was down 3 points already at this particular point and would fall considerably more. It was very much on the decline. You come over to this side of the screen. This shutdown hasn't eaten into Donald Trump's support at all. His net approval rating is actually up a point in terms of his popular support. So the bottom line is this. The first shutdown during Trump's first term, 2018-2019, was hurting Donald Trump. This one is not hurting him at all. There's no real reason Donald Trump might say, at least when it comes to popular support, I want to get out of this shutdown.
I think part of the reason is the legacy media doesn't have this, you know, they're saying the same stuff, but it's not sticking.
Yeah, and the Republican, really, it's not so much the Republicans, they're part of it, but the Trump administration's messaging is just so much more improved than any we've seen in some time. You can't turn a corner without seeing J.D. Vance or somebody representing the Trump administration discussing their point that they're trying to make. I've seen a lot less Lutnick, which I'm happy about because he seems to, he's the one step back. When you talk about two steps forward, one step back, it's usually Lutnick. I think their messaging has been outstanding putting this on the Democrats.
I did see on 60 Minutes, I guess it, I found it on YouTube, but I think it's a 60 Minutes overtime, but Lutnick and Kushner sitting down with their longtime blonde-headed lady, got to be 80 years old at this point, talking about peace in Gaza and that brokering that deal, an extended conversation. Surprised by that.
With Lutnick or with Lutnick the Middle Kushner. East negotiator that's out there with him?
Well, who was that then?
It's not Lutnick. I mean, we talk about him every single day.
Oh, yeah. But a businessman, right?
Right. Yeah. He's the envoy for Russia. Witkoff.
That's who it was.
Witkoff. Yeah. Lutnick's taken a back step, which I'm happy to see.
CBS with an hour-long interview. I thought that was pretty unusual.